Does anybody have any comments or questions or anything?
Dennis?
Yeah.
When you were reading that passage in Acts about Philip, and then you were kind of landing on obedience, transparency, and honesty, I was meditating in the Psalms yesterday, and something really, really spoke to me, and I think it really lines up with this beautifully, and it's in Psalm 15, just a couple verses. He says, O Lord, who may abide in thy tent? Who may dwell on thy holy hill? And then he tells us, and there's three things here that's really amazing. He says, he who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. Yeah, I thought that was such a really nice parallel to what you were sharing. So, anyway.
Yeah, that speaks truth in his heart is something that I think I've seen that a couple places, and that is exactly what that guy's talking about. This is not a world that's known by truth anymore at all on any level. So that's up to us at this point.
I just appreciate everything that you said. It's just such an encouragement, and it's such a so refreshing to be away from kind of the news aspect of our life and, you know, just, I guess, the mainstream thought of getting ready or whatever. That was just so much more something that I can wrap my brain around, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will from time to time if something comes up, but I'm going to, apart from almost emergencies, I'm going to be focused on, you know, who was the author from Switzerland? Francis Schaeffer. He wrote a book called How Then Shall We Live? And I think people want to know that more than they want to know whether or not the mark of the beast is going to be a vaccine.
Yes,
not that we shouldn't explore stuff. I'm too fascinated with that stuff not to touch on it from time to time, because I just think we should be aware of everything. Everything that we can possibly be aware of, biblically or otherwise, we should be aware of. So I'll do that, but that's not going to be the thrust by any means on this. So we'll just keep plugging away.
So I guess I'm just saying it's just more practical.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Hey, Dennis, in our small group study at church, we're exploring Hebrews, and they're going through the warnings. And I guess one of the things that, you know, has really been the hot topic is, what does it mean to be a Christian? And, you know, how you know that you're saved. And I know that from what I gathered from Doug Riggs a couple of times in the sermon, he talks about, you know, Hebrews and the idea of the inheritance is there, but I can't help but think, and it's hard to really reconcile that you're still torn between the fact of, you know, losing your salvation or never being saved to begin with. And then you're stuck here in this middle, and, you know, you're still trying to walk the Christian faith as best.
Yeah.
Is the question, you know, what is it? Christian, you know, and, you know, right now, because there's so many voices that are going on, and like you said, you know, people are saying, thus says the Lord, all over the place, and you want to hear that clear spiritual voice, and you want to be able to discern more than anything else, because not many people get, you know, a direct revelation from God, so you at least want to be able to discern between the true voices of God and those that aren't. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we're still, you know, walking this life, working at our salvation, as Paul would say, in fear and trembling, but then, you know, having this terror between what does it mean to, you know, to be a Christian? What does it mean to be saved? And so you're touching upon a great thing here today when you went to Romans, and you talked about the fact that, you know, it's a walk with Christ, you know, and the fact that you know, it has to be a reality in our lives. His touch upon us has to be a reality in our lives. And, you know, that we have that power in him, you know, the ability, like you said, and the fullness of contentment. So, you know, I know I rambled on a lot.
There, well, that's great. There's a little paperback that probably is the best thing I've ever read dealing with those warning passages. It's the author's name is M.R. Dehaan. It's D-E and then H-A-A-N. I think it's two A's and Dehaan. So M.R. Dehaan. And the word Hebrews is in the title. It might be Lessons on Hebrews or Writings on Hebrews or something on Hebrews. But if you can find that, it's, I bought a couple of copies not too long ago. It had been a few years, but I got a couple more. It's like $6 on Amazon or something. It's, you know, it's an older book, so it's pretty cheap. But that does a really good job. Yeah, you're right. There's things happening. There's the whole reformed crowd that says if your life doesn't look a certain way externally, you've probably never been saved. They don't think you can lose your salvation. They just think your lifestyle indicates whether you are saved or not. And that's false, because the Corinthians, their lifestyle was so messed up that Paul says, your lives are indistinguishable from the natural man. If you would look at you people, there's no way you could tell the difference between you and the flesh of the natural. So that's not true. The reform thing isn't true. Calvinism. And then the other side is, yeah, no, we don't think lifestyle is but you can lose your salvation if you go down that road. And that people take like Hebrews chapter 5 and other places to talk about that and say, see, you can lose your salvation. So that's kind of the Arminian crowd or the charismatic movement. So neither one. And that's why, you know, it is fortunate that Doug has dealt with Hebrews and that you're looking at that, because for the Christian, the issue has nothing to do with salvation. It has to do with, we've looked at rewards before, 1 Corinthians 3, inheritance in Hebrews. It has to do with those kinds of things. It's like moving forward with the Lord does have a positive recompense at the end, at the judgment seat of Christ, but nobody goes to the judgment seat. And then if they didn't measure up, they're cast in the lake of fire. That's not what the judgment seat's all about. Forgiveness means, that's one of the reasons I mentioned that thing earlier in Romans about we have to be brought back and back again to the completeness of our forgiveness. Sins will never be brought up again for us ever because they've been taken care of. As a matter of fact, and this is a tangent I won't go off on, but you won't even see the word sins brought up at the great white throne for all the unbelievers at the end of history. What's brought up is two books. One's the book of works and the other one's the book of life. The book of life simply means, do they have the life of Christ or don't they? And if they don't, the book of works in the Bible aren't sins. Works are talking about attempts at righteousness. Does the righteousness, the acts of righteousness done by the unbeliever, does it measure up to the standard that's required to get into heaven? And that standard is the perfection of the righteousness of Christ, which is given to us as a gift at salvation and secured forever. So even the unbeliever, it's not a sin issue. It's a do you believe in Christ or not issue, because many will come to the Lord at that last day. I think it's in Matthew, maybe 11, Luke 11, Matthew 11. Many will come to me and say, look at all that we did in your name. Well, those are works of righteousness. Cast out demons, prophesied, did many wonderful works. And I will say unto you, depart from me, I never knew you. So it's not, we don't look at other Christians and say, based on what I'm observing, I come to the conclusion that either they're not saved or they've lost their salvation. Not remembering that practically 90% of the examples we're given in the Bible, if you looked at them during a certain season of their life, you would swear that they were unbelievers. David's murder and adultery, Abraham selling his wife out to the Pharaoh, Peter denying the Lord publicly 3 times with swearing. I mean, you can't look at these people and say that by their lifestyle, I can tell whether they're saved or not. No, you can't. You can't see the heart and you have no idea what God's doing in them right now and where that's going to go. So we're not here to do that. We're not here to figure out who's saved and who's lost. We're here just to be sure where we're at and then offer people what the Lord guides us to offer them. If we have a hesitant, if we wonder if they're saved, give them the gospel. If we wonder if they're incarnality as a Christian, you know, remind them about that. But that'll be something that the Lord gives you at the time in the right conversation with the right person. But yeah, there's a lot of warning passages that seem to say something, but if you leave them in their context, they're not that confusing, but that's hard to do because it's natural for us to just lift a verse out, look at it and go, this looks like what this is saying. And then you got a lot of people, like you said, that are supporting those false doctrines. And so, and they try to make all the good points they can make too. And then you get, now what do I do with that? So anyway, Dehan's book is good. There's other ones, but that's probably one of the best. But yeah, it's encouraging that there's a home group looking at these things. You know, I had a couple of emails while we were gone even that said that, you know, our group is, I have to send these by transcript because, they can't get Zoom and they can't get some of the, you know, the inmates that I was working with in Oregon. But they've taken the transcripts and they're forming, you know, small inmate groups around different areas of the prison that just go through those, in the evenings when they can get together, sit around a table in the chow hall or whatever and just discuss things. So I really still believe 100% that Chuck Missler was right when he said the first church met in homes, the last church is going to meet in homes, that all of the stuff that we see out there that's public, it's all going to be taken down. And that what's going to end up at the end is what we had in the beginning, which was the pure thing. Christians meeting together in fellowship, underground, so to speak, not a part of the world, not a part of a system, not a part of something popular or religious, just spiritual people growing in Christ and doing those two things, reaching the lost and building each other up. Can't do that on Sunday morning anyway, last part anyway.
I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
Why do you think this year is coming to a close?
Significant?
Yeah.
Well, there's part of it is the generation has been, I think even people who don't look at it as this year have come to the conclusion that we're in that generation. Part of that comes from the very clear passage in Matthew where the Lord says, the generation that sees the rebirth of Israel will not pass away until all of these things be fulfilled. And one of the things that's all of those things is the return of Christ to earth until the Son of Man comes. And so we know we're in the generation. So then the issue is, well, where in the generation are we? At the beginning? We at the end? At the middle? What? So we know the clock started ticking in 1948. And it's been about 80 years, give or take. So then how do we know whether we're getting that much closer? And then then you start looking at events leading up to this year. And since the Lord says the last generation will be characterized by the labor pains of a woman, birth pangs, there would be increasing frequency and intensity. So you have the rebirth of Israel, but then you have these wars happen and different things. Because people, when I talk about this stuff, these things have been going on forever. Well, they might be, but Jesus didn't say that when you see some of these things start to happen, look up because your redemption draweth nigh. He says, when you see all of these things happen, converging in one generation, then you'll know that. And that's because they asked him that question, how will we know? And he wasn't trying to confuse them. He was answering their question clearly. Here's the list. When you see all of these things happen and they're converging in one generation, that is the last generation. So where the controversy comes in is two areas. One is, how long is a generation? And when I studied that, I came to the conclusion that a lifespan, which is usually what a generation is determined by, is 70 to 80 years. Okay, so 1948 plus 80, let's say it stretches out full generation, full length. This is in Psalm either 90 or 91, where it says the life of a man will be 70 years or 80 if he's strong. That's the only place I could find in the Bible that actually lays out a lifespan. And our lifespan in our time now matches that. It doesn't match the lifespan of of the antediluvian era, where they lived 900 years, and that would be a long generation, but it does match Psalms, it does match David's, it is the way it is now. So when's that? Well, that's 2028. Okay, so Jesus says, if this is true, he says, I'm going to come back within the generation that sees the rebirth of Israel. 80 years, 2028, which means that Jesus would touch down on earth by 2028. Now, the Bible's very clear about the fact that we can't know the day or the hour. And people always hit me with that. How could you possibly do that? What makes you think, well, I'm not talking about the day or the hour. I'm talking about A, the generation, and B, how close are we to the end of it? Because if you take 2028 and you subtract 7 years, the rapture has to happen before the 7 year tribulation. That's 2021. So that's this year for the rapture. Now, do I know that absolutely? Of course not. That's one possibility based on you study these things, you look at them, and that's a conclusion. The other side of that is that if it were just that, that would be relatively convincing, but probably not 100%. But look at everything else that's going on. Look at the, all of a sudden we have a pandemic. We've got global events taking place. We've got a push for a global government, global religion, and digital economy. It's like the birth pangs are in overdrive. Everything is moving so fast right now that there's no way any of us could have imagined even a year ago that we would, as a world, conditions would be the way they are now. It's just, it's absolutely incredible. And it has not slowed down. This so-called normalcy that we're kind of moving into right now based on all these vaccinations, I'm convinced just based on the birth pang analogy alone that we're coming up against very soon, possibly this summer or this fall, another major event that will make the last one look like a lesser birth pang by comparison, because the globalists have a goal, and that goal is global government, which issues in the kingdom of Antichrist, which the church has to be removed before that. So we can't go through the list now, but if you look at everything in Matthew 24, Paul's description of the church at the last days in 1st and 2nd Timothy, you look at all those passages that talk about the end times, the end of the age, it's all happening at a very accelerated speed right now as we speak. And I think that anybody that doesn't see that just isn't paying attention, because it's like, how could you miss it? It's in our face every day. And here's one just to make sure I could lose a few more people. I don't know how many people will hear this, but they'll be handing my tinfoil hat to me very soon, which is fine. But have you noticed? I started downloading them because this was actually a few years ago. I talked about this, and boy, man, that went absolutely nowhere. And it probably will go nowhere again for a while until it doesn't anymore, which is that I read a book by a New Age author, and he was super big in that movement, and there were others that were climbing on board with his theory. He said that there's going to come a time when on this world, millions of people are going to disappear instantly. Here's why that happens. And then he went on to explain, it's going to be because the beings who had seeded the planets in our solar system, which is where humanity comes from, actually Star Trek introduced that theory, 40, 50 years ago. Anyway, aliens have done that. And so they've been watching ever since. And they occasionally come down, fly around, called UFOs, whatever, and then they... but there's going to come a time when humanity as a whole is going to be able to move into the next evolutionary leap forward in terms of their spiritual advance, and from Homo sapien, which is where we are now, to Homo noeticus, the new man. And in order to make that spiritual evolutionary jump, those that are hindering that, in other words, the Christians, the conservatives, the people who are still stuck in the old humanity and don't get it and don't understand that Lucifer's the light and all these things that these New Agers are talking about, they don't realize that. They're going to be removed to make way for that to happen. So a long time ago, having read the Bible, Lucifer's aware there's going to come a time where he's going to have an explanation for the disappearance of potentially billions of people around this world. And he's been prepping humanity for an explanation that will involve a global abduction rather than just individual abductions. So what I'm saying is that, and I don't know this at all, I'm just saying it as a hypothetical, but imagine what Obama came out, I think it was last week or the week before, and said that, you know, when these UFOs, which we've determined are now real, when that appearance occurs, when that disclosure occurs, Obama said it, somebody else said it too, Marco Rubio, there were several because, you know, Trump had ordered that the Pentagon disclose what they know about UFOs and aliens that's been hidden. And in June, now it has to come out and we're going to see. And Obama, another one, said, when that happens, there's going to be a major shifting in religions around this world. There's going to be a convincing of people of something they never dreamed possible. I mean, if you could just picture every major city around the world, and this is again hypothetical, but the mothership floating above that city and these beings step out that are light beings, angel disguises himself as an angel of light, and they are here to rescue humanity from this massive chaos that has engulfed the world. Whether the church has beamed up before that, so to speak, or out, I don't know whether we'll see any of that or whether it will even happen for that matter, but whether we'll see it. I think that plays into it as a possibility, as a global deception that, you know, it says the whole Satan will deceive all the nations of the world. Well, what would do that? What would unite all the religions of the world and deceive the entire world? Well, I don't know, but that's one possibility. So,
and the Pope said that we
can. That's why I throw that out there, because we'll be baptizing aliens when they come. Yeah. The world leaders, and especially that's why I've been downloading these things off the Drudge Report and all these liberal news, they're talking about the UFOs. As one headline in CNN was, UFOs move from fiction to fact and from science fiction to science. And so there's this kind of premeditated priming going on to get people. Cause I know that I remember reading this years ago too. There was a survey taken in the United States, and it was something like 65% of the people in our country believe in the existence of extraterrestrial life. And at the time I was thinking, well, what evidence do they have? They had none. So why did they believe that? Buck Rogers, Star Trek, Star Wars. We've had 50 years of constant media input. It's almost unreasonable to think, and then we've had all the shame-based things where you think we're alone. You think there's nobody else out there. Who do you think you are? Kind of. So there's been a conditioning taking place for a long time just for an event like that. And the world already has the leaders of the world already have an explanation for the disappearance of the Christians at the rapture. So, you know, it's like I said, I don't know, but there's just so many things happening right now on an accelerated scale that we're seeing things start to piece together. Like pieces of the puzzle are falling rapidly into place. And so, yeah, I just think I would be surprised if you and I are still here a year from now. I'm not saying that this next year is not going to be very difficult for us. I'm just talking about being on Earth. So that's just me. And I'm assuming that. That's why, I'm doing what I'm doing and why I think a lot of people are. If you listen to JD, he's even more emotional and urgent than I am, but there's other people. I think there's Christians all over the world. They're waking up to the fact that time is really, really short right now. We just need to keep that in mind. And what does it say in Hebrews? Encourage one another the more as you see that day approaching. So I see the day approaching, and I'm trying to encourage one another the more as much as possible as we get close. There you go. Long answer to a short question, but it's not an easy question to answer. So,
thank you.
Well, that's odd. I had a thing pop up on my screen that says, your internet connection is unstable. I don't know if they're talking about me or the computer, but something's unstable here. Okay,
it's went away.
It's, don't worry about it.
Just what I'm not worried about. I'm just going to go with the flow. Whatever happens, happens. Okay. Anything else? Well, keep praying. If you want to email, you know, have a question that way too, that's good too. Just keep praying because, you know, this, you wouldn't even be here. And like I said, if this has ever thought in your mind that you're a number or that you're not, it's not working out for you, or you wouldn't even be here listening to this if God hadn't opened up, you know, a desire in you to grow. And so you've got to hang on to that because the enemy is working overtime to convince all of us that we're either Laodicea or nothing that we're doing is working, or et cetera, et cetera. He will never let up on that. And we may not have a lot of evidence in our personal lives to hold on to because we fail more than we succeed. But we can hold on to the fact that God has taken hold of us, or we wouldn't even be, we'd be among the billions of believers who don't understand or know any of this stuff. You've watched what's happening with the church. And that's one of the reasons I mentioned the church as one of the criteria for the time and the generation and all of that, is because all the labels given by Paul to what would characterize the church at the end, that's also growing exponentially, globally, nationally. It's just, I wish, you know, I just wish I could convince people these things, that I realize that's really hard to do, but we are so close. There's so much stuff happening. We're right there. And all you just need, just one day at a time, study, pray, seek the Lord, find out what he wants, you know, what he's after and all that, and just go with it, because you don't have to worry about retiring, and you don't have to worry about where you're going to be 5 years from now. There's a lot that you don't have to worry about. There's some things that might be good to be prepared for, but all in all, think about it. Just let it register sometime when you're laying in bed at night staring at the ceiling. What if there is only 8 months left? Let's say, you know, just random. What if there is 8 months left? What would the implications of that be in my mindset? If I knew that, not just guessing it, but if the Bible actually taught enough to make that crystal clear that we've only got 7, 8, 9, whatever, we've only got that many months left, how would that change your perspective on basically everything?
I would stop paying my bills.
I know there's people say, well, first thing I do is I'd max out my credit card like you would not believe, because I've always wanted an RV, and why not? I'll never have to pay that thing off. I'm not talking about disobeying God for 8 months. I'm talking about just a general, you know, mindset of what's going on right now. But look at it, you know, I try not to send out too much. I guarantee you, I know some people have told me, you're just sending out too much stuff, and I can't listen to all of it, and I can't do that. Well, I don't send out half as much as what's sent to me, and I don't listen to all the stuff that's sent to me either. I get that feeling, and I, like Pam, I don't want to spend my time focused on things that are secondary when I can be focused on things that are primary. But like I said earlier, I want to be aware of all of it. That's just my own personality, so I will do as much as I can. But if I send something out, and if you do have time, I don't agree with everything that I send out. I agree with some of it, or I wouldn't have sent it, but that's another, just we're recording this and we're talking about it. I get emails saying, why'd you send that out? That guy said this. Yeah, I know he said that, and I think that's completely whacked, and so I wouldn't take that to heart. Well, then why'd you send it? Because the other 47 things he said were right on. And so sort it out. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There was a guy that I sent out recently, and I disagree with a lot of what he says. But he has, you know, the one that says Christians aren't supposed to be yelling at healthcare workers and calling them Nazis and all that kind of stuff. Well, yeah, I agree with that. But he also, and I'm not going to go into it now. My point is, if I send something, that's not a blanket endorsement. That's simply saying there's something in this that apparently Dennis thinks might be worth listening to, but I'm probably going to have to sort this out because there's maybe some other things that if I recommend somebody like a Sparks or somebody like that, I'll tell you that you need to lock into this guy's ministry because this is awesome. But I can't do that with everybody. I can't do that probably with most people, but that doesn't mean there aren't some people out there I'll give an example. I really like J.D. Frog. I listen to every one of his updates. He believes that the word apostasy in Thessalonians refers to the rapture. It does not refer, it refers to the great rebellion, the great falling away of the church from the truth. I will still send out JD and I will still do his updates because I really like him. Unless it gets super strange, I'm not going to let that one misinterpretation of one word in one verse. I'm not going to throw that out because of that. I disagree with him, but that's so what? There's too much that I agree with. So please keep that in mind too. And I hope everybody hears this and listens because I have gotten a lot of emails about that stuff. That guy was whacked. Why did you send him? Well, that's the reason. I hope that makes sense. Okay. Well, with that in mind, please pray for me as I pray for you, and we will just keep moving forward and see what God does next. So, all right. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.